This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Dark, a podcast about the CW's Rivervale that might seem familiar, but is also eerily different. I'm Rolex.
You know what? This is too dark. I can't do this anymore. It's too dark. The dark voice is too dark in the dark show. I'm Jurston.
I'm Pete.
Oh, wow. See, some things aren't familiar, and we are going to be talking about the Riverdale, season 6 premiere, chapter 96, Welcome to Rivervale, which is the kickoff of the 5-episode event beginning here in season 6. Things get wild and crazy real quick. Pete, I know you have a bunch of questions. Just hold them for a second here. I know you're wrestling with your head. You've got so many of them. I've got a lot of questions too. And certainly I think we should start
I walked away from this just like, yep.
No questions.
No. Euro. Yeah. Makes sense to me.
Wow.
Let's tune in next week and see what happens.
Here we go with this same old.
Oof, another boilerplate Riverdale episode.
There's so much to talk about and so much to parse apart, and we'll get to all of that in a second. But first, even though this is some sort of alternate universe thing that's going on here, which I'm sure we'll all have theories about, there are things that you do need to know going into this episode still that left off at the end of season 5. Most notably, Betty and Archie finally decide to get together, only to find that there was a bomb under their bed. You already have questions.
Yeah, look, what are you doing?
This is our first Rivervale podcast, so I know you're a little confused.
I'm confused. I have a lot of questions. Before you start recapping and getting into the things that happened, I have questions.
All right. What? So the Archie comics is about several decades old. They're published on paper.
Yeah. I know all of this. I know all of this. This is a good question.
Junk as a character eats a lot of burgers.
Yeah.
And there's your recap.
On paper. Huh.
Okay. Yeah, can I just get through the recap and then you can ask the questions? Is that all right? Because I'm sure this will hopefully answer some of your questions going to have. So at the end of season 5, Betty and Archie finally decided to get together, only to discover that there was a bomb under Archie's bed left by Hiram Lodge on his way out of town. There was a big explosion. We didn't get to see what happened. Meanwhile, across town, Veronica and Reggie had gotten together and set up two businesses. Yep. First, they had an investment business, and then the back room, they had a casino that they were starting.
And a sex business.
The sex with each other. I don't think they were paying
that's
for that.
That's not a business.
If you do it right. It is if you do it.
No, I don't.
Hey, man,
satisfied customer is what I say.
We're going to get to very tricky territory here in terms of these jokes and everything. So let's
now
not
I'm really worried
follow
about
this path. But Reggie and Veronica have decided to get back together and work on these dual businesses together. So that's what's going on with them. However, they were not doing it with the permission of the newly formed Riverdale Council, which include Tony, Tabitha, Uncle Frank, and Alice. They had reformed the government. However, at the same time, Cheryl had found out that her ancestor was a witch who was burned at the stake by a bunch of everybody else's ancestors, demanded retribution for that. Everybody was like, hold on a second. We've got 50 million other things to do. And Cheryl said, that's it. I'm seceding from Riverdale and forming my own town, nation, not 100% clear, but in Thornhill, that is populated by redheaded girls like her.
Mostly true.
And it also embraced her witchly heritage by casting a spell that cast an ill wind throughout the town of Riverdale that everybody felt. That's something that happened towards the end of the season. Now, on the upswing, however, were Jughead and Tabitha, who decided not only to date, but also potentially to move in together. Tony and Fangs, already living together, decided that they loved each other and were going to raise baby Anthony together. And finally, I mentioned them earlier, but Alice and Frank kind of struck up a little bit of a flirtation towards the end of the season. Oh, also, Kevin is there. Kevin had decided to go back to New York and pursue a Broadway career. You don't really need to know that for this episode, but Kevin is also a character on this show.
Well, he's getting in shape. He's jogging a lot, finding stuff when he jogs.
Yeah, yeah, good for there Kevin. You go.
So that's the big things that you need to know going into this episode. Now, as we pick up, though, we are in a very different town called Rivervale that is being narrated by Jughead. And now, Pete, is the appropriate time for questions.
Oh, great, great. How long are we going to be in Rivervale?
The rest of our lives.
Is this a three-part thing for the season?
Five-episode event, once a week. Ending with episode 100, which is going to come in December, presumably. And then there's going to be a break until March, and the rest of season 6 will continue.
So we got 5 more episodes in Rivervale, is what you're telling.
Correct.
So
four more of these
to go through.
Yeah, okay. We probably should have established in the recap. I didn't say this, but 4 + 1 = 5. Okay, go ahead.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Just recap. Some
quick math here. Because there's new math now, so just so everybody's on the same page. So we have to do this again a bunch more times before we can get back to Riverdale, which is the show we all agreed to. We didn't sign off on an alternate universe.
We didn't sign off on it?
Yeah, we didn't sign off on any of this.
What is entitled fandom?
Were you not there for the vote?
I guess
we all
wasn't.
Had a vote. It passed 52-48.
Maybe it was on Twitch. I don't do a lot of twitching, so maybe that's what it was.
And I always think it's where you didn't vote for Bughead in the great Barchi Bughead vote head to head.
That was also 52-48. It was wild.
Okay.
It sort of feels like the same people might be voting. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Cool.
But here's the important thing. The important thing I want to emphasize to everybody, vote in every election, because then otherwise you get results like this that you just don't like.
Yeah.
That's a great ad for voting.
You're kind of on the outside looking in, and if you would have voted, you would have been informed of what's happening. So I'm an uninformed voter, and I guess I deserve it. So it's all my fault.
So it's hard to really parse what Pete is asking for here or what his opinion of Rivervale is, but I will go ahead and fill the air by saying I think this is great. No other show on television takes risks like this.
That's true. Wild. Because why would you? Why would you take a show that you love and then say, no, you don't get any of that. You get this
Here's
other
the thing,
show.
Though, Pete, you get a lot of what you love.
No.
But it's all mixed up, and they get to take it to an extreme that they wouldn't normally take it to. I don't know if you watched the end of the episode, but
I did.
One of the more major characters gets really messed up.
Here's what I like about this. What I like about this is that it is purposefully off-putting. Like a lot of stuff on Riverdale, I feel like Riverdale, sometimes deservedly, but more often than not, takes a lot of flack online for what are they doing here? This is a wild plot twist. These writers don't know what they're doing. I think most of the time we agree they know exactly what they're doing. And here, this is something that is supposed to make you feel off-kilter. It's supposed to make you feel weird. You're supposed to be like, why is Betty doing? Why is anybody doing this? Why is any of this happening? That's the mystery of these 5 episodes, and that's what we're going to find out. It's not supposed to make you feel comfortable, but in particular, this episode is channeling movies like Midsommar, like Wicker Man, things like that that have that creeping dread before it finally explodes at the end. And I think it really nicely channels that, both through the look of the episode and the pacing as well. What were you going to say, Pete?
Also take shots at comic book collectors in this one, which, you know, I mean, it's bad enough we're in the Vale and not in the Dale, which we all signed up for the Dale. I don't remember signing up for the Vale, but again, I must have missed it. But then you're going to, you know, I'm going to get a kick in the pants for collecting comic books on
the
way.
First of all, it was a positive kick in the pants, so more like a handshake in the pants.
It was not.
A lot of ideas flying around here. Is there any other way to do a handshake than the pants? I go to a lot of very positive business meetings.
Not after the vote. Yeah. I think we know how we all fall on this particular episode, just in terms of generally how we're feeling about it.
I think what you were saying, Alex, I think everyone's like, this show is crazy, but this episode and this five episode run, I'm assuming it's not absolutely crazy. It's not out of nowhere. It's taking themes and ideas that are already in the show and just heightening them a little bit. Mm-hmm. Character moves here. If this was just like a random, like, special Halloween episode or like,
sense if it was a Halloween episode.
But what I'm saying is it's taking stuff that they actually work to establish in the main show over the run of all of the seasons, and especially this most recent season, which set up most of it did. So you can't deny that all of the stuff that happens here, like Cheryl sort of going rogue with Thornhill, like Betty and Archie getting together, like all the and like trying to like really settle down hard fast, like all of these things are there, and we're just heightening them out of reality to the point where we get to see something we would never normally see in this show or any other show.
The two things that I'll mention in addition here, one, what this feels like to me, to your point, Justin, is they basically took the entire show and put it in Cheryl's plot line. You know, we've talked a lot about how sometimes it feels like there's five roads running on Riverdale. Just you have these different feels of there's Archie's plot line, whatever's going on in Betty's plot line, which often intersects with Jughead's plot line, et cetera, et cetera. But Cheryl is always living in this insane gothic horror place that is so heightened beyond almost anything else that's going on in the show most of the time. To me, it feels like they basically just took it and shoved it in there. And that's almost why Cheryl, to me, is the most comfortable character in this episode, because she's like, you're all over on my side of the street now. That's cool. Let's hang out. This is fun.
And I also think the show, when it first started, was sort of compared favorably to Twin Peaks and noted as Twin Peaks as a major sort of influence. And I think we see that truly on display here. There's been gestures toward it a lot over
Twilight
the course of the
run. It's Twilight Zone.
There's Twilight Zone in here, but a lot of the way that it's shot and some of the music choices and just the way the characters start to act strangely and the way their performances are, I think, is very Twin Peaks.
And the one other thing I'll say on the opposite end of the spectrum, which I know Pete is not going to like, but I talked to Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa for the day job, and he did say, he emphasized, once again, we talked about this on our podcast, and he's like, yep, it's in canon. I don't think he specifically said that, but we asked him if it was in canon. He's like, it all counts. He reemphasized
that. Wait, the veil counts?
It counts. He says not only are these five episodes serialized, but they are serialized and continue throughout season six. So the stuff that happened here might be an alternate universe, but it also affects what happens in the rest of the season.
And I
so
think
if you
we
pull
I think
out
I,
somebody's heart in the alternate universe. It affects
the amount
your heart
of times, and not to pivot this towards my interview because we really should get into plot points, but the amount of times that Roberto was like, "Yep, Archie's dead," I was like, "Yeah, but come on, really?" And he was like, "No, dead, 100%."
But and I mean, this is a show that this past season had Archie seeing actual ghosts and never was like, nope, it was a dream Archie was having. It lets us get a little free and loose with the barriers of this reality.
Yeah,
because
that's
so,
what Riverdale needs to be. It's more free and loose. You know what I mean? More off the rails.
I don't need this show to go back to like, nope, they're in high school, and boy, is Jughead mad.
It's not going to not be Riverdale. Well.
This was really actually a good recap of the first season. I remember that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, Pete, I just think it's funny. You like the show to be Riverdale. Why are you, when it's just a little extra, little maple syrup,
it's
little
twisted.
Extra jingle jangle,
it's not,
there's
yeah,
a little a jingle jangle in there.
This show is already on enough jingle jangle. It doesn't need more. It's cranked
the
11.
Other day. The
what
other day,
doing?
I don't want to call you out, Pete, but the other day we do a fruit roll-ups podcast, and you were talking about the twisted fruit roll-ups where they all got all mixed up in the factory, and you were saying it was the best thing ever. So I don't know why you enjoy that
Yeah.
The Twisted Fool at Rollups, but not this, the Twisted Riverbell.
When on our oatmeal podcast, you were like, you know, what are they putting raisins on this shit? You were so mad about raisins on it. And I was like, it's just a regular oatmeal, and it's not that intense, really, the raisins. And you were like, no, I signed up for oatmeal.
So about as much consistency in your opinions on the three different podcasts we definitely do as there is to oatmeal, I would say. But yeah. Why don't we jump into the
podcast? In our roller
here.
Skating podcast, you were like, rollerblade. The wheels have to be next to each other. That's I like that.
Pete hates this. Why don't we jump into the episode? So we got Jughead as our narrator. He's telling the story, yep. Which certainly seems to indicate in some way something that we talked about, that potentially this is Jughead's book, a story he's telling, some sort of riff on the real events.
He's hosting an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Something
he's
like that.
He's standing.
But I love this, and I love this opening
he's
sequence,
standing.
Too, just for him. Yeah, I loved how he stand.
Cole Sprouse,
legs for days. That's all I'm going to say.
True. Or just legs, really. Yeah, just, the real revelation.
Just legs for a day.
legs for minutes.
I like how he hosts this. I like how snotty he is about everything going on. There's some great comments throughout here from him talking about let that sink in when he goes into Betty and Archie's house, or later on when they're talking about maple syrup at the town council, and he goes, says, riveting, isn't it? That's fun. I love the tone of that.
The best one is when he was talking about Veronica and Reggie, and he was like, exhausting, aren't they? That was hysterical.
He's having a lot of fun here, and it's fun to see that, even though it's not totally clear exactly how that connects to the Jughead that we're seeing.
I don't know how he could be having fun. He's living in a nightmare house, and he's also with the wrong person. So I don't know who's having fun.
Okay, hold on.
Save that for 9 podcasts ago. save that for the oatmeal podcast. I agree with you, and I do think it's nice, especially after a season where Jughead was just sort of out of it and like had a tough time, to see him sort of in this power position, being the Zach Morris timeout or the like Parker Lewis can't lose of the show right now, where he gets to comment on everything, freeze time and whatnot, is cool.
Parker Lewis Can't Lose was the original Twilight Zone.
Yes, that's exactly right. And please try to Google any of them.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump in. There's a couple of different plot lines, but it is interesting how they sort of intersect here, and they all not revolve around Cheryl, but connect through Cheryl. So I guess we can kind of walk through the episode a little bit and talk about the plot lines as we get to them. One of them is Tony and Fangs. They can't get baby Anthony to fall asleep. One of my absolute favorite things that makes this entire Rivervale thing worth it. You know exactly what I'm going to say.
Of course.
Dr. Colonel Jr. being the town doctor.
That was
like not
just
the
awful.
Coroner, but the doctor. So funny. I love
his ideas are horrible. Why are people listening to this?
No, this is true. Justin,
it's
you have
not
kids
true.
As well. If your baby coughs, you put a toad in their mouth.
Nope. You should not do that. You should never do that.
I got a toad in each of my kids' mouths right now.
I've been standing outside vaccination centers and saying, hey, instead of getting vaccinated, why don't you stick these toads in your mouth?
Don't be that guy.
Why don't you stick this toad in your mouth?
That'll solve
this whole storyline is wild because it's like, they're like, put a toad in your mouth. That seems crazy. And they're like, he's like, but seriously, if your baby's colicky, leave him in the woods for a while.
Yeah, that's an even better thing. Just leave your kid in the woods.
I've wanted to do that.
I don't know how you guys are enjoying this show. The parenting alone is stressing me the fuck out.
I did think, I'm still not on board with the whole Tony Fangs thing, but I did think Fangs was very funny in this episode. His whole toughen him up, hitting the muscle thing was a very funny move. I thought all the stuff with Tony just being at her wit's end with the baby, her interaction with Cheryl in the woods, and Cheryl immediately calming down the baby with some herbs that she already had on, I thought was really good. I like this. I thought this was really funny and fun, even though I'm not necessarily inclined to be into the Tony and Fags relationship.
Yeah, I agree. I like all of this. And it is, I'm curious in the next 4 episodes if we are going to sort of reset after each one and
do a
new sort of dark tale, or if it'll continue on here, because this episode does a lot to establish like what's up with everybody. And the idea that Fangs and Tony are sort of like, we're just a normal family trying to get by, and we left our baby in the woods and encountered the witch woman who gave us this poison ivy potion and all this.
Yeah. And in exchange, we agreed to kill our friend, the end.
Yeah.
Just to answer that question, so it is serialized. So it's going to pick up the next episode and everybody's going to be like, yep, killed Archie. Pretty cool. Town's doing great now. So that's going to continue. But at the same time, we're seemingly going to have some sort of anthology structure at the same time. So like next episode is going to be a ghost stories one. The third episode is going to be the devil coming to town. The fourth episode is the witch episode. Sabrina shows up. And then the fifth episode, we don't know much about other than it's episode 100. But it seems like it's going to continue. Like it's going to follow the plot regardless.
You guys... Who you think the devil's going to be, your favorite character? You think it's going to be?
Lucifer?
No, your favorite character on the show, do you think is they're going to make him the devil?
Dr. Curdle Jr.?
No.
Who do you mean? Are you talking about Hiram?
No, Archie? I'm talking about Tony. A slogan that you guys say all the time and think he's the greatest character. And I think it was a T-shirt for a little while and...
Oh, Brett Weston Wallace. That's who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't have a favorite character. We have a real hero of Riverdale. Mm-hmm. And his name is Chick.
Yeah, he's the real hero. He would never be the devil.
I had to remind you of that, but
maybe
sure.
Maybe if the devil is showing up, Chick will show up as God.
That makes a lot of sense.
The real hero of my life.
Wow.
Now I'm imagining you every Sunday just going down and praying to Chick.
Even I'm confused when that happens, but I'm like, all right, here we go. So we got Tony and Fangs. Then we go over to Tabitha and Jughead. Tabitha and Jughead move in together. Very creepy real estate agent gives them the keys. And first day, right off, Jughead kills a spider, which brings a whole bug invasion into their house. That's what they're dealing.
Bughead is haunting him. And there it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That's what I was about to ask. If you thought that was a reference to that.
Yeah, I couldn't believe he killed that spider. I mean, that's just, it's not smart.
You couldn't believe it? So a spider pops up behind you and you're like, oh, better make this, put him on a little pillow and carrying him outside.
Yeah, exactly. Because you don't want to curse your whole new living environment.
So you didn't like this because you were scared of Rivervale. You just agree with everything that happens. And you can't believe these characters aren't doing the right thing.
Exactly, yep.
What do you think? I'm not going to ask you, Pete, because I know what you think. This is not to exclude you from the discussion, but I know which way direction this could go. Justin, how do you feel about Jughead and Tabitha in this episode, living together, their relationship, how things are going?
It's interesting. It feels like they're like, look, we're a rom-com in the middle kind of a thing. Like they're like a happy couple. They're struggling with like, oh, we are a little different. We're moving in together. You believe in that we're cursed and you don't believe that we're currently cursed. I like their relationship. I think they have a nice dynamic. And it is an interesting counterpoint to the other sort of couple who's nesting of Tony and Fangs.
Yeah. I liked it as well. I thought I was a little iffy about them deciding to move in together at the end of the last episode. But here, I think it worked. I think they were fun together. I thought it went in different directions than I expected. You know, I sort of thought that there would be a strain on the relationship because they were moving in together. But it doesn't necessarily feel that way. If anything, it's more about just kind of figuring out each other's living space and what it means. I'm curious to see what happens going forward. Seems like there's going to be some more stuff going on in their apartment because that real estate invasion was pretty shady. But overall, I thought it was good. And it was nice to have some solid relationship stuff going on in the middle of everything else that was happening.
Fuck you.
What did you say, boo?
Yeah, I don't want them to be the solid couple, all right? I don't like it. We're spending a lot of time with them. It's just
when you're on a roller coaster, are you yelling at the wheels?
Yep.
Why don't you just enjoy the ride for a second?
The whole time I'm yelling at the wheels.
Seems like not a great way to enjoy anything.
Well, you live your life, I'll live mine.
Let's move on and talk about another couple here, Reggie and Veronica, who are hitting some hard times throughout the episode. They are going hard as a power couple. We get to see them
treadmilling,
making a couple of deals. Veronica is calling New York. Reggie is very jealous, both of her and also of Archie. That ultimately gets solved by Veronica helping kill Archie, which is, you know,
yeah,
a good resolution to that relationship. I'm sure anybody who ships Varchie was very pleased with that. They're like, good, that's done with.
That's Yeah, you should feel good. All the ships should feel good here.
Yes.
We've eliminated all of the worry.
Yes. What did you think of everything going on with Reggie and Veronica, though?
I thought it was fun. I mean, I think
love the amount of hesitancy from everybody to talk about everything here, by the way.
I think it's one of those just kind of like as, you know, Jughead is saying, it's exhausting. It's kind of fun to see them spin out a little bit, you know. They're both kind of like intense, so it's fun to kind of see what would happen in this kind of micro universe of them together. So yeah, it was, you know, I was sorry to see that like Reggie was kind of letting Archie into their relationship when he's not there. So it was kind of, you know, it was fun to see Veronica like be like, oh, I'll take care of this, Reggie. Don't you worry about it. I'll just murder Archie and then we can be together.
I like this too. I mean, they have the vibe of the yuppie couple in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, in a fun way, that I like them on the treadmills, Veronica being like, look, a bed of money for us to have sex on. And that I was like, how has she never had sex on money?
What?
That was what
was running through your head. How is this?
Yes. During that scene, I got to tell you, my main thing is that's so uncomfortable. Like that's
money.
Having sex on a bed of money, that's going to get
paper
in all sorts
cuts
of cracks.
Alone.
You know? Exactly. Maybe worse than sex on the beach, honestly.
You got to make sure that money is soft and not like new money because you could get in trouble.
You gotta have sex on some nice wet money. That's what you're talking about.
Well, not old wet. Jesus.
You soak the money in the tub for a little while so it gets nice and wet. Then you throw it on the bed. Also get the bed all wet.
Nothing hotter than wet money, just anytime. Like when someone is like, here's your change and one of the bills is wet, I'm like, well, I would rather not have this money, if at all possible.
But no paper cuts? No paper cuts.
Oh, my God.
What a weird suggestion. A couple of romantics here, you're like, yeah, that's gross, especially sex on the beach. Ew. Not my thing. And then you're like, make the money wet.
Well, make the sand wet, too. That's going to be better.
The sand is often wet. I don't know if you know, there's a spot on the beach where the sand is quite wet.
I've never been to the beach. Is it nice?
Yeah. Best place to have sex. No one would ever. You can go there, any beach, have sex anywhere. No questions asked.
Quick question. Sex anytime on money on the beach? Yes?
Yes. A little harder. Might lose a little bit. My favorite drink is, I always go up to the bar and order a sex on wet money. Is that a normal drink order? Well, how much money have you guys had sex on? You guys are more like penny.
Yeah, for me, mostly it's a pile of quarters.
Wow, quarters.
At the arcade one night, you know what I'm talking about? You break out the machine.
You had a huge night on the Mortal Kombat arcade game.
Yeah, made some serious bank there. Reggie and Veronica, I do like them together. I think they're very fun. I don't think they're necessarily done with the jealousy or anything like that. But I also liked seeing a very classic Reggie and Archie matchup here with the ludicrous over-the-top sawing match.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
very fun. Felt right out of the comics.
Dude fun. Was,
those guys are jacked.
Yeah. The thing, this is very much jumping ahead, but the thing that I thought was funny about the Maple Festival is it felt like a classic Archie comic, except for the fact that you know something terrible is going on.
Well, I think a lot of this stuff is sort of harkening back to the comics. Like the Reggie Veronica relationship felt very much out of the comic. Like they're sort of in love of their love of money that they share. And that's a thing that Veronica has much more in the comics than in the show. And Betty being like, I just want to settle down with Archie. It felt like it is sort of returning to that as a basis because it lets them get wilder with the way it heightens, I think.
Now, I think we got to turn and talk about the next couple that gets introduced at the episode, which is Betty and Archie. And there's so much stuff to talk about here.
Puke.
Yeah.
Because over the course of the episode, not only are they alive, clearly, not only is Archie hearing a mysterious ticking noise and having dreams of a town called Riverdale, but over the course of the episode, it's been revealed it really seems like they've been together for a long time now. Mrs. Andrews is calling. She's been asking about marriage a bunch of times, about a baby a bunch of times. Vegas seemingly still alive in this reality. So that's a big clue that things are not exactly all that they seem. And ultimately, over the course of the episode, they're investigating Cheryl, but Betty gets convinced by the whole plot, first finds out she's barren from Dr. Kirtle Jr., then teams up with Cheryl because of the fertility lights, becomes pregnant with Archie's son, and then helps kill him by the end of the episode. So, Justin, as the Barchi on the podcast, just run us through the emotions you went through watching this episode.
There's a range here, and I will say, I was like, this is the relationship we've been waiting for. It's so nice. They're great together. I see your thumb going, I guess, downward, Pete. And then it starts to, and I like that there's a little bit of them like working together. Like Betty's like, there's a cold case like this. Archie's trying to get in Cheryl's plot line, trying to get these, the maple trees planted. And they are sort of giving some of that Bughead energy that I think was in the show for a long time, which I love that. That feels like a nice stable thing for their relationship.
Just to interrupt real quick before I forget about that, I actually like that it was a different energy because...
Well, I agree. It was very much a Barchi version of it, but the fact that it was like, mm-hmm. let's partner up and do stuff as well.
Oh, totally. But what I appreciated about it, there was a lot of questions, I think, going into this relationship of, oh, is it just going to become Bughead 2.0? That doesn't make sense for Archie. And I do think they figured out a way for Betty to still be investigative Betty, be with Archie, but then both doing kind of their own plot lines. And it bummed me out a little bit that we haven't gotten to see this more throughout the show, because I really do think it does work in a different way than Bughead while still providing this anchor for weird mysteries, which is the thing that makes Riverdale work. But sorry, go ahead.
And maybe on your point, I think coming out of Rivervale, maybe we will sort of drop back into that dynamic.
I just felt bad for Betty because it seemed like every time you saw her in her eyes, she looked like she was like aware that this was not a real reality and she was like dying inside. Like her eyes were extra like kind of like glazed over and kind of like there was like a help me vibe that she was kind of putting off. Did you guys kind of pick up on that at all?
Nope. You ever think that was maybe partially your opinion, maybe going through?
Well, that's why I'm asking, because that's why I picked up.
You know, how close were you to the TV when you were watching? Because it's possible your eyes
millimeters away. I was millimeters away.
You were seeing your eyes reflected on the screen.
Oh, that's probably what
was going on.
Pete, the TV hasn't been on this whole time. What have you been seeing?
I mean, if anything, Betty is the opposite to me. I know you're sort of joking here, Pete, but Betty is all in on this reality, which clearly, by the way that she is at the end, Archie is the only one who seems outside of it. And this is getting into the bigger things. There's a lot of other things to talk about at the episode. But given that it definitely seems over the course of the episode that Archie is the one who is having this nightmare or aware that Riverdale exists or something like that, maybe like a lot of people have speculated, he's in a coma from the bomb and imagining this. Given that he dies at the end, that throws a big twist in terms of what at least I thought was going on over the course of watching this episode.
Yes, I agree with that. And I sort of feel like that's where we're going to land, that this is, we're seeing the seconds after the explosion from the end of last season. That's what Rivervale is them like coming out of that. But I do think it sort of makes sense in a dream, you know, so you don't need to see the distorted version of you. So you would observe everyone else that you know in your sort of dream world. So I think that's maybe what's happening. But getting back to sort of my emotions watching Barchi, seeing this made me a little nervous because if this is different from Riverdale, then does that mean we won't get this in
exactly
Riverdale?
And this is the only time you'll get it, so enjoy it for the four more reps because then it's all over.
And the name of this segment is called Giving Pete Something to Cling to so that we can enjoy ourselves on this podcast.
Thank you.
Again, not to go back to this interview, but Roberto did say that it would be mean to take away Barchi at this point so we will see it in some way.
My man.
It definitely did feel like watching this episode, I think compared it on the podcast before to like Lucy pulling away the football, that you always get it for one episode that they're like, yoink. This feels like the biggest yoink possible at the end of the episode where I was like, come on, man. We got one episode of them being married, talking about babies. They're together. We get to see what they look like as a couple.
One was too much.
Oh, we're literally ripping his heart out and he's dead now. And she's pregnant with his baby. And that's the status quo. Crazy.
Isn't the name of this episode The Biggest Yoink? Because I agree with you. This is like, hello, bartender. I'd like a shot of tequila. They're like, would you like all of the tequila? Like, no. And they're like, too bad. And now it's gone.
Oh, boy. So lots of other things to talk about here. We also, as mentioned, we get a little bit with Kevin. He's calling around, tells them about this ritual with a dead deer with no heart, which is sort of the hook for the episode. These sort of rituals have been going on for decades over at Thornhill. Ultimately, we find out it is a fertility ritual. It's a renewal ritual to help heal the maple trees over in Riverdale. I want to throw a wild, almost baseless theory out to you guys. Ooh. Is it possible the reason Kevin is on the outside here is because he's the one in some way that is responsible for this?
What?
I have no basis for this other than he's the only one who doesn't really seem involved. Like, he doesn't really make a deal with Cheryl. He's just kind of there. He's supporting stuff. And then next episode, we're getting these ghost stories. And again, this is like from scanned footage, but it seems like he's the same sort of thing where like Tony is trying to track down this ghost and he's kind of there, you know?
I would say that theory has some legs, but Kevin has been on the outside of every season?
Yeah, I was going to say.
So are you saying he's dreaming all of this?
Yes, it's going to be
this is
like
his vision
his
for everything?
Dream?
This nightmare where he kind of doesn't matter to the plot too much?
Oh, man.
Yeah, imagine that. What a horror show.
I guess my theory only had legs for seconds. Sorry about that.
That's exactly. Well, let me throw out there, though, to give your theory some credence. I mean, he is sort of the catalyst to a lot of this. He finds the initial deer. He's the one that says the saplings have been ruined, which raises the action and sort of puts it more on Archie being the focus. So I think that could be, and it sort of makes sense in a dream logic way that he would be the one.
We'll see. It's one episode. I don't really feel very tied to this theory. It's just something that maybe I was trying to make it so that Kevin gets more weight in the storyline.
Gets more to do. Yeah. It would be nice.
Well, I love if we come up to episode 6 and it starts with, and that was my crazy dream. What did you guys dream about last night? It's like, Kevin, wow.
Well, also the fact that everybody else continues from their storyline, right? Like, they pick up directly from where we left them pretty much. Maybe there's a month-long gap. Maybe it's the next day. Maybe it's both, potentially. But regardless, we find out continuing from where we left them off, except for Kevin, who's like, well, I'm leaving town to go to Broadway. And we pick up no mention of that. He's still in Riverdale. He's still doing the same thing he's doing, which raises my alarm bells a little bit, I guess I would say.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right, let's move on. Talk about, as we're kind of working through here, a couple of other things. We get to see Cheryl and her minions over at Thornhill. Yes.
Yeah. Please. I would like to say, like, in this episode, we get an amazing Cheryl entrance with her minions. Like, at least we're still getting amazing Cheryl moments, you know, if you're having a hard time with the veil of it all. But I do think that this was kind of like the Cheryl versus the town versus Cheryl back and forth. I'm kind of hoping that we're kind of pushing Cheryl out of her imaginary world and more into reality. I mean, you know, we don't get a lot of that, but I'm just like, even every time she's anywhere near Tony, my heart gets a flutter and I have hopes and dreams that hopefully don't get shattered.
I mean, this was definitely the closest Shoni time, the most positive, like them, Cheryl helping Tony with
straight
baby
up
Anthony.
Helping. Yeah.
And then, yep, super helpful. And then the meeting that they have, and like Tony's backing Cheryl throughout here. So, yes. But also, I mean, we're fully in to your point earlier, Alex, we're fully in Cheryl's world here. She is dominating everything.
She's wheeling and dealing, making deals, asking for favors.
Yeah, not to throw you under the bus, Pete, but I feel like your Cheryl moving towards a more realistic place over the course of these five episodes has less base than my Kevin is behind all of it theory.
Okay,
and that has basically nothing.
That's fair.
Yeah, because I think she's moving further off. And you can see it in the way her lines are much more arch. They're almost like poetic. The line she had, "We'll make a stew from its meat, a pelt from its hide, and a paste from its hooves." It's like, what? She is almost ahead of everyone in a way that feels like she also has a lot of control over the story. And she always is like, her wardrobe's always great, but I feel like even that's taken a step up here. Like, it feels like we are sort of really within her world.
And the Minions is a totally different thing than the Pretty Poisons a couple of seasons back, where it's...
Again, though, it's a heightening of that. It's like just a step up where they all have weapons all the time.
They have weapons all the time, but they're also all little Cheryls. And they're all, other than Britta, I don't think we find out any of their names, but they're all just like, whatever you want, Cheryl. We're all here. We're all little Cheryls.
How does she, who keeps giving her kids? You know what I mean? Like, how does, it's a redhead. All right, we got to give it to Cheryl.
That's how it works, man. Got to get them all in the one place.
Traditionally, they were pushed out onto the ice, and here they're just given to Cheryl and the Thornhill.
Oh, man.
So here's a scene we should talk about. The Tabitha and Jughead moving in together scene, where they're doing it with Betty and Archie. Betty and Tabitha talk. Betty says, "We have a definite answer who I'm going to end up with, Jughead or Archie." Turns out it's Archie. What did everybody feel about this scene?
First off, I was like, oof, tough ask. Help me move X. Yeah. That's crazy. And then that line you just said, I was like, wow, I can't believe we're getting this. And it makes it feel real.
I must have blacked that out. I have no memory of that.
Well, Jughead seems totally cool with Archie in particular. This is the first time in a really long time we've gotten Jughead and Archie just being friend scenes. Ultimately, it takes on a sort of an ominous pall by the end when they're doing the pancake contest, and you're like, what's going on here?
Why aren't they eating cheeseburgers? Because Jughead would have demolished Archie.
Well, there's a lot of maple syrup hype in this episode. They ate 119 pancakes?
That's a lot of pancakes.
In what reality? Like, I was putting myself in the head of the writer, and I was like, how did you land on 119? I can't imagine eating more than, like, 6 pancakes.
What, dude? Come on.
Large pancakes like that? Have you ever been – I'm forgetting the name of the place. There's a place in L.A. that has pancakes the size of the ones that they did for that contest. And I think they basically have a dare, like, try to eat 6 of them. Good luck. Like, you can't. That's too much for a human being. Pete, what's the most pancakes?
I've eaten a lot of pancakes. You can eat 6 pancakes. You can eat it.
What's the most pancakes?
And then fucking, I don't know. I've eaten a lot of pancakes, but I'm just saying.
Give us a number, Pete.
6 is not.
You keep saying 6. You keep saying more than 6.
Would you say 7?
We should have established this before the recap, but that's 6 + 1.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Math. Yeah. Pre-cap math. Great. So I guess Pete could only ever eat 7 pancakes.
Which is very close to 119, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That was wild. That was a wild moment. And just a lot of in general, like seeing the pancake to go bag, I was like, so weird. That's what, again, I like this show. Like, they commit up and down on stuff being weird.
I love that they have enough regular customers who are ordering stacks of hundreds of pancakes that they have a large pancake to go pack. That's great.
Yeah.
More of that.
In Rivervale, people have a full hundo is a normal breakfast. Mm-hmm. Big day, 100 pancakes.
Yes. So continue to walk through here, just calling out a couple of scenes. Let's see. So Jughead eats a cereal full of cockroaches. Have any of you guys ever tried that?
How many cockroaches do you eat in a normal day? Like 7 people?
I personally can eat 6. Tops. There's a restaurant in L.A.
It probably is. Same restaurant. Yeah, probably. Pancake restaurants covered in cockroaches.
Yeah.
Hard to wipe up that scene.
I could not deal with that scene. No. That was horrible. All of the bug stuff, I just do not like bugs. So that was too much.
Yeah, I don't like bugs. I don't like bugs.
Yeah.
I just hate bugs.
Hey, stop that.
Do we talk about Frank and Alice? We might have skipped over. Do we talk about Frank and Alice yet? I don't think we have Frank and Alice. So first of all, Frank and Alice is the doctor, not the monster. That's probably first to establish. Yeah. Like how I gave up on that halfway through.
Frank and Alice, I did. I appreciated it. Yes. I actually liked it better that you gave up on it.
So Frank and Alice are having a whole rom-com in the middle of everything that's going on, where Alice keeps stuffing up her drains so that Frank can come over and fix them, making him dinner and breakfast and everything. Pete, I had a question for you. This was driving me crazy, and I feel like you could answer this question. So Alice has Frank over for dinner and makes him kielbasa, right? I think.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. That's there's some comedy where they're like, ooh, delicious kielbasa at dinner.
Oh, well, the kielbasa joke is from what you call it. Oh, my God. Jack Black. Tenacious D did a whole kielbasa like song and stuff like that. So I don't know.
Well, it's not what I'm thinking of. It's like a Naked Gun or Airplane or something like that. I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But the whole thing was kind of goofy, but very fun. We're F Palace shippers, I think, for life on this podcast. But at the same time, I like what they're doing with Frank and Alice. What do you guys think about it?
I like it as well. I thought I was surprised by how what a hard stop we got in here with it. Like, and it was such a sort of ongoing thing that then it felt like it came crashing down. I'm assuming a lot of these sort of beginnings we got in this episode will be picked up on going forward, and we'll get their own little horror story, like you said, Alex.
Go ahead, Pete.
Me and myself and Irene? That was the kielbasa joke. I don't know.
Maybe. It might be me, myself, and Irene. That's possible. What a weird thing to remember. And I'm sure it was not a reference to that. But I liked actually how adult it was. Like, I would have expected them to go pretty hard on it immediately, given that they'd be like, we've lived our lives, let's go for it, like kind of how Alice presents it. But the fact that they're going to take it slow and make it sort of a slow burn, I thought was nice. I like that. Particularly because people are so tied to FP and Alice to bring a new romance into her life.
Yeah, we need a little time. Need a little time. Yeah.
We need time. We need 3 to 4 seasons before we can be good with it. Yeah. Then another thing to call out, this is a fun little Easter egg here. Archie is reading Sports Illuminated, and on the cover is Chuck Clayton, who we haven't seen since, I believe, season one. Maybe season two, but definitely season one. He was pretty prominent there. So that was fun, and I hope they do more stuff like that. Go ahead, Justin.
I was just going to say that was really cool. Just the Maple Festival in general, I thought was a really fun, like, it's not necessarily an Easter egg, but just felt very like comic booky and very referential in a good way.
Did you guys when they kind of walked into the festival, there was this fun moment where this kid yells like, "Get away from me!" Did you hear that? I lost it because I was like, "This is perfect." I am so like, even this kid is creeped out by the whole idea of this and doesn't trust any parent in Rivervale as you should. So I really like that.
I love that moment too. Another one that I really liked was Cheryl calling Tabitha Tab Tab. That was really funny. And there was some Nana Rose line I wrote down, but I don't remember what it was. Oh, where she said, the old ways.
Yeah.
That was very funny. And the other one I loved, even though it was purposely so creepy, but Lily Reinhart's delivery on the "I'm with child, it's a son, I know it, and in 25 years he'll be Maple King." I love the delivery on that line. That was perfectly, just absolutely skin-crawlingly horrifying.
Yeah.
Really, really well done.
Another line that got me sort of in that vein was Cheryl's line to Archie, which was, "Over your dead body." No, Archie. Over yours. I was like, oh, shit, she means that.
Yeah.
And that's when I first felt like, oh, they might actually kill Archie in this episode, was on that line. So that was cool.
That was a badass Cheryl moment for sure.
Yeah. And towards the end of the episode, I don't know if there's any other things that we want to talk about. Justin, any of the Barchi scenes you want to call out in particular, or the couch scene or the table scene or anything like that?
No, loving all of them. Keeping them. Keep them up. Can't keep them up. Barchi's dead. We're just going to We're just going to rewatch. Just going to rewatch and stop at about 50
last
minutes.
Last episode of Riverdale. So at the end of the episode, Archie goes to seemingly rescue Betty. She doesn't need to be rescued because she is with child. Veronica, as we mentioned, hits him with, I think, a frying pan.
Yeah.
Wasn't 100% sure. They tie him up. He's covered in symbols, has a hoard crown tied to an altar. Cheryl cuts out his heart. Everybody dances. And then we get the end of the episode. Jughead says that Archie was, which I thought was very interesting, born 25 years ago in Riverdale. I think other than the dream, that's the first mention of Riverdale in the whole episode, died in a sleepy shadow town of Rivervale, and we're just getting started. And the sign outside town has changed to say the town with heart instead of a place you'll never want to leave. And there's a heart, I believe, in or maybe it's a tree that has red leaves on it now versus a dead tree previously. So that was all very interesting. Any other moments from the episode that you wanted to call out in particular?
Right around then when Archie's, I think he's strapped to the stone. He's like, I'm not a virgin. I just thought that was a really funny little line to include there. Everyone sort of chuckles.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we know. We've watched the show.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of
you. We've seen the show, man. We get it.
Pete, any other moments?
Yeah, I love the it felt like a classic episode where it was very high paced, high octane, kind of like hitting you with all these different ideas, which I really felt like a episode that, you know, really moved, which was great. But yeah, I just afterwards, I just would had a lot of questions and was just kind of worried about like how long we're going to be in Crazy Town.
Well, I think you're supposed to have a lot of questions at the end here. That's kind of the point. Yeah. I'm curious to see. This is the sort of thing that I think in particular will work really, really well, probably on a binge when it ends up on Netflix, because it will demand that you tune into the next episode. I'm curious to see how it works week to week. I feel like people are going to just spiral out of control.
I do like this. It's a fun thing of like Archie dying at the end of every episode. Like he got blown up at the end of one episode, and then this one gets his heart ripped out. Like it could be an interesting,
He's the Kenny man.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Kenny of Riverdale or Rivervale.
Well, and it does make me think if we're going to get a ghost, the devil, like maybe we'll be seeing more of Archie here.
Oh, ghost
just because
Archie.
He's dead. I feel like he could come back as a ghost. You know, there's a lot of ways to play this that I think keep Archie present and we get to actually maybe see some different sides of him. Him as a ghost, sort of observing everyone without being able to impulsively act, I think would be really cool. Him being the devil. I mean, he's such a pure heart in every season of this show. Him being like a tempter or somehow like on a dark side of Riverdale and Rivervale, I think would be very cool. Like if this five episode run really revolves around Archie and killing him, has striking him down has only made him more powerful. I feel like we could be in for some real fun.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see what happens. My suspicion is he is not going to be in this, and we're going he is going to be off for these episodes until at least episode 100, when it seems like there's some sort of time-jumping shenanigans type thing going on, and I think there were some behind-the-scenes pictures where he was filming for that episode. So we'll have to see. I'm really curious how they're going to, how that crazy kid is going to get out of this one. It'll be fun to follow.
Yeah. He's never really been able to get, he's never had to tangle with the idea of his body being dead.
Yeah. That's, in a way, the ultimate bear that we all have to fight is death.
That's right.
Death itself.
Wow.
Before we wrap up here, who was the MVP of this episode? Pete, who was the MVP of this episode?
You got to go with Betty on this one. Her axe throwing was just marvelous.
Really great. I loved Betty challenging Archie to that, by the way.
Yeah. And I also like Archie's line of like, I've already won two. Like, how does that not count here? But I, you know, I'm hoping that this is foreshadowing and we're going to see like axe throwing Betty more moving forward, because I feel like that'd be fun to see. Maybe she goes up against like Cheryl's horde and like throws a bunch of axes. You know, it'll be cool.
Yeah. Justin?
I want to shout out Pete real quick for in an episode filled with Betty making out with Archie. Pete found a way to find a win for Betty that did not encounter any of that those messy feelings. Because I think I have to give it up for Barchi in this episode to get to see them really, it ended weird, but like breakups are weird and you never know what, how it's going to go down. I really appreciated seeing them at full bore, their relationship going at 100 miles an hour.
This is a tough one. I'm going to give it up for Cheryl in this episode.
Nice.
I do think she's clearly the central character that everything is revolving around at this point, or at least influencing everything. Curious to see if that continues in future episodes. It feels like it might, but just this whole mystery is very weird. It's very alarming, but that's a good place to be in with a show 6 seasons in. And a lot of that does have to do with Cheryl and the moves they've made that have been some big moves, but there's some interesting ones. Will they work? Maybe not. Maybe this won't work, but I would rather they take swings and they try things than not try anything at all. I'm sure there's some people out there that definitely... You think it's going to work? You're feeling good?
Yeah. All of this is working. All this is working for me.
I feel good. It's fine. Everything's fine. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. You can check us out socially a couple of different places. Riverdale Dark on Twitter, Riverdale After on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, we'll see you after Vale.
After Vale.